Hey everybody, welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies. My pronouns are he, him, and I am also a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
And my name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Right. So, because we do that every week, and just in case anybody forgot. So, before we get to what's on the show this week, I just wanted to tell everyone listening real quick that over on the Patreon, that's patreon.com/spoilerpiece, we discuss the 2002 David Fincher directed Jodie Foster starring Panic Room.
Yeah.
One of us was a first timer with that one, so that's very fun. Yeah. And we get into a little bit of the production history of Panic Room, which is just sort of fascinating, doing inside baseball stuff on that. So anyway, if you want to listen to that, it's over on our Patreon. You become a $5 member or 10 or 75 or 82, whatever you wanted to give us. You get additional audio each week that nobody else gets. And there's something like 250 back episodes at this point. So there's a lot of shit in there. So please consider it. It would mean a lot to us. And thank you, current patrons, too. On the show this week, we have the documentary Julia about Julia Child. Big surprise. We have The Feast, which is a Welsh film about a feast.
Yeah.
And then we have the latest Marvel entry, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which is, it's a large movie. So anyway, though, we were going to start off with Julia tonight, which is, like I said, a documentary about Julia Child. It's directed by Julie Cohen and Betsy West, who also directed, I think, RBG and what's the other one we just saw? Pauly Murray? My name is Pauly Murray?
Yes.
Yeah. They directed those two movies. So this is exactly what it says. It's a documentary about Julia Child. I have heard Bob Spitz say that it's based on his book about her, but I think his name's in the credits somewhere.
His name
but
is.
I don't. Okay. So anyway, I mean, it's a documentary about Julia Child. What did you two think?
I loved this.
Same.
I mean, I like Julia Child anyway. I grew up watching her on PBS. With Jacques Pepin. And so, and I love cooking shows. I love food shows. And this is just such a delightful, lovely love letter to Julia Child and cooking and food in general. And she's so fun and funny and vibrant. And she's such a culinary pioneer that it's great to see how she got into TV production and her history, you know, going to France. And I mean, none of this is radically new information for me. I've read about her before, but it was still great to see. And what I love about this is that, I mean, this is very slickly edited, but I love that we get shots of cooking food, talking head interviews with chefs and food writers and critics, audio of Julia Child herself from interviews, excerpts from her journals and letters on screen, archival footage, and shots of places she'd been, like the first restaurant she went to in France. I love that. I just think it's really well done and really well put together.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really great mix.
Sorry, Evan, go.
Yeah, it's a really great mix of material, different kinds. And I love there's some really sexy food photography in this.
There is! I thought of you, Evan, when I was thinking that too. Because that was one of our complaints in one of the food documentaries from last year was that there was no sexy food footage.
Yeah, and that's just so disappointing. And I love that this opens with Jimi Hendrix. Let me stand next to your fire and let's look at some gorgeous roasted chicken. And I love how they pair the on-screen cooking, like the modern day preparations to dishes that she was cooking in footage. Like the beef bourguignon, I think, right?
Yes.
Well, the dish that they're preparing on.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's just such great food. And the editing, like you said, Megan, it's really well edited together. I love the excerpts from her correspondence or diaries or letters. And like you, I knew some about Julia Child. So this wasn't like not a ton of like revelatory information. But what I think is really great about this documentary is that it gets to her on this like very human personal level. It just it makes you feel familiar with her in ways that like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, you know, I knew the broad strokes of like how she met her husband, but like, I didn't know more about the particulars of their relationship and their dynamics. And I really, enjoyed hearing about that, or, you know, hearing about how she, you know, had some kind of homophobic things that she said and how she kind of realized that that was wrong and then kind of came out on the other side and began, you know, campaigning and like speaking out about AIDS and trying to get, you know, help for people with AIDS in the gay community. So I don't know, hearing those kinds of stories I thought were like really cool. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed getting to know her on a more like personal, nuanced level. And I think that's where this documentary really succeeded for me.
I completely agree with you, Evan. And I'm so glad you brought that up because I was so horrified when I found out she was homophobic. And yeah, and then when her friend died of AIDS, she was like, well, this is just horrible. And she had like a complete 180. And that's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's sad that that took that, but that's amazing. And I love how she was all that Cecile Richards is also in it from Planned Parenthood and how she was mm-hmm. so supportive of Planned Parenthood and she was pro-choice and she got picketed against from anti-abortion jerks, but she was like, I don't give a shit. I'm doing this because this is necessary. And I love that. So I agree with you mm-hmm. that you're right. You definitely get a feel for her in a way that you might not have otherwise. So completely agree.
Yeah, I think you're both right. I think the strengths of this are that it's sort of round. You know, I feel like I sort of had a 65 or 70% picture of her. And, you know, maybe I don't have 100% now, but I did not learn a lot of things I didn't know. But the things that I did learn, like the AIDS activism, for example, that was all very cool and new to me. And I did not realize, although I guess I should have, having seen her show a million times, so much of it is, obviously there are cue cards and notes and things, but so much of it is ad-libbed because of the nature of food.
Yeah.
And also because she was just really good on her feet. yes. Like from the beginning,
yeah,
she was a natural. So I thought that there was not much of a learning curve, mm-hmm. because she just kind of could do it naturally. That was very cool. And it's always fun to hear somebody talk about how tall she is because you're like, well, yes, she was tall. Everyone knows that. She was tall. Moving on. She's a very tall woman.
Very true. I just find it so interesting. I mean, I know I said she was a culinary pioneer and she really was, but I kind of love how the documentary ends on this note of, you know, on Instagram and Twitter and how so many people post food photos and how chefs are so well known, you know, there's so many celebrity chefs and she started that. Like, that's just, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it was also exciting because almost every single person who was a talking head, I know and not know personally, but I know their work and I really like them. So it was great.
Yeah.
Like I was like seeing Ruth Reichel. I love Marcus Samuelson. Anyway, it was great.
I love Marcus Samuelson. I didn't know that Sarah Moulton was one of her student, one of her proteges.
I didn't know that either.
Like I was like, what is Sarah Moulton doing in this show?
I was thinking that too.
Oh, that's what she's doing on this show. Oh, it all makes sense now. Well, did anybody have any parting thoughts on Julia before we move on? I feel like it's a rather, as good as it is, it's a pretty cut and dried kind of movie.
I liked the local aspects of mm-hmm. the story. I mean, given the fact that she lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and, you know, they're talking about how Savinor was her butcher. It's like, I've been to Savinor's. I know Savinor's.
That's wild.
Yeah. So it's funny to think about the local aspect of her being around here and being on, you know, WGBH mm-hmm. and WGBH launching essentially, you know, cooking television. Yeah. Like they also locally pioneered this and, you know, they saw the value in it. Like when the original story was that she was appearing to promote her book on a show about books. And then she did a cooking demo. And that was such a big hit that they ordered, you know, a pilot for her. And I think they said like three pilot episodes.
Yeah, they did three pilots.
But I love that she was like, I need a hot plate. And the guy's like, that's an unusual request. She's like, well, I need one anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know if we can get a hot plate. Get a hot plate.
I need it. Mm-hmm. I love that.
So I dug that. And I also dug the conversations about how she was kind of a tough cookie when it came to negotiating things. And like she had this kind of air of being like very pleasant and happy, and they talk about her flirtatiousness, and I thought that was all very funny. But like when it came down to business, she like really advocated for herself and really fought for herself. And like when PBS pushed her out, you know, she went on Good Morning America and just just started a new chapter in her career, and she just was like, no, I'm not done.
I find that really fascinating too. Not only that, but also the fact that they were trying to push her out as, you know, as she was aging. And I mean, media is such an industry, as society is in general, of being, you know, incredibly sexist and ageist. And to see her just getting better and better as she aged, it was just lovely to see. It was also great to see how supportive her husband Paul was. And Ruth Reichel mentions, you know, that you just didn't see husbands at that time have their wife surpass them success-wise and be so supportive. And I mean, it really was unusual. And that's great to see. And just seeing that she didn't want to do the traditional path because she came from such a wealthy background and she wanted a more unconventional life. It was just, it's really, really interesting. I agree, Evan. I like all of those things that you mentioned too. I also really liked the conversations from the chefs as well as from Julia Child herself talking about how food should be pleasurable. Like you should take risks. Mm-hmm. Like don't be afraid. It's okay to make mistakes and you should be enjoying food because it is something that's, you know, decadent and sumptuous and it should bring you joy. And I love that. And I love Marcus Samuelson also talks about how food is identity and sharing food is like, hey, this is a piece of myself and my story. And I love that too. And I love that the film contextualizes that as well. I think it's really, really great. And I think it's so important. And Julie Cohen and Betsy West clearly do a great job in showcasing women who are not just women, because Pauli Murray is non-binary, but people who are powerful and people who have made such a difference in history. And I think that that's really great to showcase. The one thing that I wish they'd focus more on, but I was really glad they kept it in though, because one person comments on this, when they start off the documentary, or not start off, but when they're starting to talk about what food was like when Julia Child came on the scene and about how it was like Jell-O with marshmallows in it and carrots. And that's awful. And I'm like looking at that and I'm like, well, that's what white people were doing, but I don't think that's what like people of color were doing food-wise. And I wish,
good point.
Thank you. And I wish there was more discussion about that. However, Julia Child's niece does mention the fact that, you know, coming from, you know, a white upper class background, that that's what food was like. And so I like that they left that in her mentioning that. I wish there had been a little bit more of that, but I'm glad that it was at least in there.
Yeah. And one more thing I wanted to add.
I'm going to add two more things. So there you go.
Something you said made me think of it, Megan. There was a recent episode of WTF Mark Maron that I listened to where he was talking to David Chang.
Oh, love David Chang.
He was talking about how like chefs, like some of the best chefs around were self-taught because they didn't like, they didn't know the rules. So they didn't know when they were breaking the rules. And one of the aspects of the documentary that I found really fascinating was talking about like the French school of cooking and this idea that you have these like very specific rules and procedures. And like as Julia Child was, you know, writing her first big cookbook, was like looking at some of those and finding her own ways, like her own spin on things or more ways to make things more accessible to people, like, you know, the American audience or like the average person. And I loved hearing about that. I thought that was a really cool aspect of how she made cooking more accessible to people.
But yet she didn't take shortcuts. And I love that too. Like she was very exacting and scientific.
I know I was asked you guys like 5 minutes ago whether you have anything more to say, but I have two more things to say. One, I'm glad that I learned that her father was kind of a dick. I don't know why. I'm just like, but you know, I'm kind of glad that I knew that he didn't like what she did and she did it anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's admirable.
Yeah. And I also like that she would show people the Dan Aykroyd, Julia Child bit from Saturday Night Live that she thought that was hilarious. So when she cut the famous, she cut her finger on the show. And so they lampooned that on Saturday Night Live. So if you haven't seen that, I think everyone's probably seen that, but it's a lot of fun. Okay. Again, anything else, gang?
No, well, not for me. No. Just that this is a great documentary and this was such a joy to watch.
Yes. Agreed.
Okay. Well, let's move on to something that maybe was not a joy to watch, question mark?
Not for me.
The Feast.
I knew it.
Which is, it's a Welsh movie. It's in Welsh. It's about a feast of a different kind. Basically, it's about ecology, really, but and greed. It's about ecology and greed. Yeah.
Yes.
It's folk horror.
Capitalism.
Yeah. What did you say, Evan? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
It's folk horror, too.
Yes,
right. It's definitely. Folk horror, for sure. Because the whole thing hinges on this mythological creature from what part of the forest is she
the
from?
Rise. Or
the land? The Rise.
The Rise.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But we don't actually know that until very late in the game. I mean, you get hints of it, right. Of course, but...
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I'll give you the kind of the play-by-play here. I don't think the IMDb does it justice, so I'm going to go for the little longer wiki. Mm-hmm. One evening, a wealthy family gathers for dinner at an estate in the Welsh mountains. True. The family invites two guests, a businessman and neighboring farmer. True. The businessman is intent to secure a business deal to mine in the nearby countryside. That very evening, when a mysterious woman arrives to be their waitress, the family's beliefs and values are questioned as her quiet yet unnerving presence begins to change their lives. I mean, the consequences of which are slow and deliberate murders. I mean, that's true. Mm-hmm.
That is
that
true.
That part's true.
Yes. Slow and deliberate are good descriptors of this mm-hmm. movie.
Very yes. good descriptors.
And I would say clinical. This movie is clinical in its, I mean, the lines in this movie. Good Lord. The sharp edges. I guess that's not really here or there, considering the house they live in. But it is an interesting choice that you've got all this beautiful Welsh countryside, and then you have this very contemporary home in the middle of it, which I'm sure is part of the point. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this rich family who is they're a group of assholes.
Yeah, and weirdos.
And assholes weirdos. And weirdos. Yeah, yeah, like one of you just learn sort of casually that one of them is a rapist.
Oh
like,
my God, what? That was so horrifying.
Like just right. throws that line out there and his response is they were asleep. And it's like, oh my God.
Right. I mean, and also cuts himself shaving his junk and seems to have no reaction to it.
Right. Right.
I mean, I was more disturbed by the rape, but yes, that is also really bizarre.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you guys had the rape part covered. I figured like another weird thing was that.
Yeah. But wait a minute. I don't think the other son is an asshole. I mean, he's dealing with addiction, but he's not really an asshole.
That's true. He's sort of a willing, I think that Kadi, who is the server, wait person, whatever, that the help, I don't know what you want to call
server.
It.
Server. No, server. Not the help.
No, I know, not the help. I mean, you know, I don't, what I mean is what these people would probably call her.
Oh, I mean, yeah, they would call her that. I would say server, but yes, they would probably call her the help.
Their regular server who usually works for them on dinners like these is, I think her father became ill or something. Anyway, she can't do it. And so she recommends Kadi, who works at this pub where she works. And so Kadi shows and she's late. And did anybody notice how wet her hair was, by the way?
Yes.
Because I immediately saw at the beginning, I'm like, why is her hair so wet? And boy, do you learn why.
You sure do.
But anyway, so what basically happens is there's this mining going on this old Welsh countryside. And there's a folk legend about, they don't even say what she is. They just say, they call her she. They do? Or they don't?
No, I said, you said they don't talk about what it is. And I said, no, they don't.
Yeah, they're just like.
They do say she. Don't disturb her. You don't want
to don't disturb her. Don't, you can't go to the rise because you don't want to disturb her. And so what you realize is whoever's been drilling on this land has disturbed her. And
boy, have they.
Yeah, yeah. And then Kadi was in a car accident on the way over and her car went into the lake and she drowned and her or she or whatever from the rise took Kadi's body and is exacting her revenge.
Yes.
And oh,
gruesomely.
My Lord. I think my favorite single piece of revenge is that she saves the one asshole son from choking to death so that she can cut off his penis later with a piece of glass that she has put somewhere very private.
Yes. The broken bottle glass up her vagina is amazing.
Yeah, when she did like so what happens is anyway, there's this dinner, there's the asshole family, mom and dad are assholes. The first kid when he was putting on that Greco-Roman unitard, I guess you would call it, I was like, what? Is he going to go wrestle someone? I literally did not know. And that's why I sent you to that text that was like, I'm 7 minutes into this and what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And then I saw him riding a bike and I was like, oh, he's training for something. Okay, got it.
Right.
Yes, his triathlon.
There's a lot of WTF moments in the opening like minutes of this movie where you're just wondering, where the fuck is this going? It's extremely eerie and unsettling.
I know.
Oh, and from the beginning.
We have this girl who showed up here who hasn't said anything. By the way, I paused it. She doesn't say a single word until like 21 minutes into the movie.
Yep.
So it's just like, what is her deal? Why is she not saying anything? What is going on?
Well, it's all so it's interesting how at the beginning, I don't know if she's being timid or if she's like more like she's getting the lay of the land, because she has a turn. She has a turn where she goes from being just sort of observant or whatever to becoming, I don't want to say malevolent, but it's like, I now have my plan and I will execute that. Like, that's the look on her face, you know? Because she is rightly very, very upset that she has been disturbed by all of the drilling on the land. And she is very horrified by the land being destroyed. I mean, they make that, she's not just out there like fucking killing people.
Right.
She's doing this because she's like, you're destroying the land. It's not like she's just some evil wood nymph. I don't even fucking know.
Wood nymph. Mm-hmm. I like it.
So I also appreciate, by the way, that the asshole mining guy, his name is Euros. Like, I mean, I know that's not like their Euro, but I mean, it's it's like
very fitting.
The Euro. Yeah.
And he's gross, by the way.
Yes.
His style of eating, of just shoving three fingers into his mouth with his food in his hand.
I don't know.
It was fucking weird.
Well, disgusting. I also got the impression, obviously, that she sort of had some kind of, eventually had some kind of psychic hold over all of them.
I got that too.
Yes.
Because like the fact that the father is constantly hearing an ear piercing, you know, sound that only he's hearing, but he hears it when Cottie's around. Yeah.
Right.
The only thing that can stop it is that skewer.
That shish kebab skewer right in the ear.
Oh my God. And she's singing like a lullaby to him as he's dying. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
My favorite part of that is that she's got the skewer and she just hands it to him and he's like, oh, right, the ear, got it. <You know? laughs> I mean, Evan had, so we were texting about this and I think, Evan, you sent to me the slowest of slow burns, right?
Yes.
You sent that to both of us.
You did text that, yes.
And that is absolutely true because it, I mean, and for good reason, you know, you need all this setup and it's executed, I think, so well. I mean, the direction is very, very controlled and very deliberate, along with the pacing. I mean, who knows what the screenplay looked like, because obviously I didn't read it. And when the recovering addict son drops the blade of the axe on his foot, immediately I was like, well, this is going to come back.
Of course.
I mean, how can
it
not?
And then boy, did it. Ladies and gentlemen listening at home, at some point he shoots some heroin into his toes and then he is ill.
Mushrooms.
Yeah, those are mushrooms.
Oh, it was mushrooms. Yeah. I beg your pardon. You're right. They went to the Rise to get mushrooms from the tree. That's right. Don't go to the Rise.
Don't go to the Rise. Mom warned you.
I also like how mom, like, you know, when she's talking to the farmer, Mayer is her name, and her husband couldn't make it because he's got the thing that's pulling the car out of the lake that Cottie's, you know, dead body is in, or was in, I should say. Mom is kind of like dismissing the Rise. She's like, you can't have anybody drill in the Rise. That's like where she lives. You don't want to wake her up. And mom's like, Glenda, she's like, oh, bullshit, the fucking Rise. But then later when shit becomes real, she says to her kids, I told you never to go to the Rise. You may wake her. And you're like, oh, you did believe it, didn't you?
Convenient.
Yeah.
She didn't believe it when it involved her getting money.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to be honest, this movie is a lot more fun to talk about than it is to watch. I found this excruciating. It was so much body horror, and not that I have a problem with body horror, but I felt like so much of it was just pure shock value. And I hate when I'm watching a movie and feel like it's just trying to like continually one up itself with shock And I know that this does have a point, and I appreciate the point that it's trying to make, but I just found it absolutely torturous to get to that. When I said the slowest of slow burns, I didn't mean it as a compliment.
You didn't mean it in a good way.
Well, I agree with you, sort of. The slow burn did not bother me, as I like a good slow burn, and I like a good body horror. Big David Cronenberg fan, for example. But I think that it actually, there was body horror, and then once it sort of, once you got past the maggot-infested leg,
you know, then everything, once you get past that.
Everything else
that
wasn't
said on this week's episode.
Yeah. Everything else wasn't quite as horrible as that. I mean, because what did you think? What did you think was as horrible?
Yeah,
I mean,
the sex scene.
Well, yeah, but
with the broken bottle.
But you don't like. I mean, that's, you know, they're silhouetted in the distance, and he's just like screaming in pain. That to me. Now, granted, who wants to be in that situation? But at the same time, it didn't really like freak me out the way the fucking maggot leg did. I mean, good Lord. And. So at the end, when mom is slicing like pieces of his leg to feed to the
to Euros,
slicing pieces of her son's leg.
Yep.
Oh, son of a bitch. Slicing pieces of her son's leg to give to Euros, who, by the way, does break down into like dog like ravenous eating. Mm-hmm. I went back and watched when mom is like cleavering the rabbit. And I couldn't tell during, because you remember those quick cuts when
those
it shows
scenes with the rabbits.
Well, yeah, no. I looked away at that. So,
oh well, there's a bunch of quick cuts where you see Cottie in the yard, like, you know, she's just doing Cottie stuff. You know, she's being with the plants.
Cottie stuff. Yeah.
And then you see the rabbit, and I thought when they did that, I'm like, was that a leg? And so I went back and I couldn't tell. So, but at the end, it certainly is.
But that also makes sense too. I mean, like when you're watching it at first, I was thinking, I was like, well, I would also have the same reaction as Cottie. Like I would have fucking flipped the fuck out if I saw some dead rabbits. But
yeah, that was gross.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then when Glenda asks her, she's like, you're not a vegetarian, are you? Like so disdainful and dismissive. And she's like, no. So I was like, why did she have such a strong reaction? And that, you know, obviously is a big clue, which obviously ties into her nature. Mm-hmm. Mother Earth role, which I think is great. But I want to talk about, because I haven't shared what I think of this movie.
I would love to hear what you think.
Yes, thank you. I thought this was great. I also love body horror. I also love good eco horror. And I love a slow burn as well. And I think this definitely pays off. I'm not sure if I ever want to watch it again. Because it is a brutal film, but I'm really glad I watched this. I think this was a fascinating, fascinating watch. And I completely agree with you, Dave, about the controlled direction. I think it's really well done. I really enjoyed this, but I also completely understand why you did not like it, Evan. But what I
suspected you might.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Evan's not going to like this. But I just want to say, I totally get what you're saying about shock for shock value, but I didn't get the sense it was just shock for shock value.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Thank you. I felt that the punishments kind of fit the crime. This is sad, but the kid who is dealing with addiction, like he has a problem, you know, with the mushrooms and then the leg and then the maggots. And then the other, you know, the other son is a rapist. And so he gets a horrifying end, and like everything kind of fit in a weird, strange way. And like Euros is fed, you know, he's becoming a cannibal, an unwilling cannibal, but it makes sense because he's, you know, feeding off of the land in a really gross consumerist way. So for me, it was really shocking, but it wasn't just for shock value. There was kind of a purpose to it, or an underlying reason to it.
And I'm going to piggyback on that and say the reason I think it wasn't for shock value is because you could have seen mom blow Euros' head off with that shotgun.
Yes.
And they did not show that.
That is true. So it is restrained in certain scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was waiting for that.
They didn't show something.
Well, they didn't show the cut up, torn up penis either.
Yeah.
Did they need to?
I mean,
no. I'm just saying, but if it was for shock value, they might have.
Yeah. They had intercut other violent imagery over that.
Yeah, that's
that true.
True.
That is true.
That's true.
They definitely didn't need to show it.
And then, of course, my favorite part is mom cuts her own throat at the end. And
yeah, then, I was kind of pissed about that.
Well, I mean, when I say favorite part, here's what I mean. Because you kind of think mom is having some sort of cathartic cleansing of whatever. Like, no, she's dead too. But then Kadi like dumps gasoline all over them and sets them all on fire.
Yes.
Yeah. Turns them into a bonfire. I was like, oh my God, it just doesn't stop.
No. I had a question about that actually.
Oh yes.
Did Kadi also kill Mare, the neighbor? Was her body in the group, in the pile of bodies? Because I feel like if she got killed, that would be bullshit. Like yes. She shouldn't deserve to be killed.
I didn't see it in there, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. But again, I feel like I now need to go back and like freeze frame.
I was looking though.
Curious.
Right. Because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, well, wait a minute. If Mare gets killed, then this is just an evil, malevolent being. But Mare is the one who's respectful of the land and respectful of this creature. So she should be spared. And she left the dinner, which she thought was bullshit too.
Yeah. And she left, she came back, but I didn't remember when. I didn't know what happened after she came back. I didn't remember her leaving again.
Well, I also wanted to add that this movie ends with a fourth wall break, which is usually my least favorite way to end a movie. If you've only got one fourth wall break and it's your final shot, no. But this movie, I feel like, earned it.
I think earns it too.
Like, it's just like, all right, so now you watched all this stuff. Now, what are you going to do about it? You know? That's what I thought.
Yeah, I also think it's a really interesting look on Kadi's face too.
It really is.
Yeah, because throughout the film, we see a lot, like when talking about her malevolence, and Dave, I don't remember when you said it, but you said there was a point where she kind of turns more malevolent or seems to be. But there's actually a scene early on that kind of indicates that something's off. Another scene that indicates something's off with her when she's trying on the earrings, Glenda's earrings, and she's like cackling maniacally. It's like, what is happening here?
I feel like that's when she had her turn, when the shirt.
Oh, that's when
dirty.
You. Okay, I thought you were saying later. Okay, well, then never mind. But what I will continue saying is, you know, she vacillates wildly between that kind of, you know, laughing and jubilance in horror, you know, like blood is splattered all over her face when the rapist son chops off the leg of the other son and she like is splashed with blood and she's like laughing about it. So there's that, but then she also looks really sad other times and kind of pivots between these two polarities, and the final shot seems to encapsulate like,
totally.
I did it, but also I'm angry, but also I'm so sad. And it's really, really well done. Great facial acting.
Yeah, I thought so too, because she goes from, I've just lit these people on fire. Awesome. But look what they did. Look how awful this all is. Why I had to do this because they destroyed everything. And it's almost like she's kind of like, well, this is no fun. Now they're burnt, but so what? The land is still fucked.
Right.
You know?
Yep. This is going to be a weird comparison. Yeah. But it kind of reminds me of the final shot of Zero Dark Thirty when Jessica Chastain looks so defeated. And it's like, it's supposed to be this like jubilant moment, but it's really not. And it's an empty victory. And so it kind of sort of reminded me of that. But yeah, I love that final shot. I think it's great.
I wanted to add really quickly that over on the Feast's Wikipedia page, there is a quote from former BAFTA member and friend of the show, Deirdre Crimmins. Rue Morgue's Deirdre Crimmins suggests that whatever you do, decline all invitations to dinner parties.
And Dave, you and I were both eating when we watched this.
Yeah, funny. I was texting the two of you, and I think it was you, Megan, you were like, ha, just wait. And I was like, okay, and pause. You know, because I was just like, I don't want to take any risks that like this actually vegetarian pizza that I was eating was just gonna like make me want to hurl. So so I took a pause, I ate my pizza, and then I continued.
I'm glad I watched this after I ate. We watched Julia first while we were eating, and then watched this. Although this kind of put the rest of the night in kind of like a somber
food. Yeah, I'll bet.
You should have reversed it. But eaten dinner through Julia, which is, that's what I did too. I stopped 2/3 of the way through the feast so then I could eat dinner and I watched Julia.
I think that was the right way to do it.
Yes. Because I don't usually lose my appetite when I'm watching horror, but I was like, this film seems off. I feel like I need to do that and I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think I mentioned this at the top. This movie is almost entirely in Welsh, so be prepared to read subtitles. But
yes.
Yeah. But it, you know, once you figure out what's going on, the subtitles are kind of incidental anyway. So anyway, anybody have any final thoughts on the feast before we move on? The feast.
No, just that I enjoyed it.
I'm laughing that this movie is called The Feast. So anyway, final movie of the night. We have the new Marvel entry, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Not 12 or 8 rings, the 10 rings. And so, yeah, this is the latest Marvel movie.
It's actually not the latest.
Eternals is the latest.
I beg your pardon. Eternals just came out. This came out, what, two weeks ago? I don't even know.
It came out a couple months ago, but yeah, just on Disney Plus it came out.
Oh, is that why we're watching it? Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
It's finally available virtually.
Yeah. I will be reading the IMDb one sentence summary. Shang-Chi, the master of weaponry-based kung fu. Is forced to confront his past after being drawn into the Ten Rings organization. That's not great.
No.
That's
bad summary.
Bad summary, IMDb.
This is why I don't read IMDb summaries.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that going like, that's like not really even close. I mean, what happens is Shang-Chi's dad is like got these Ten Rings and he's all evil and he's taken over the world and then he meets Shang-Chi's mother, who's like, no, you will not take over the world. You will love me. And he's like, oh, yes, that is what I will do. And then dad's past comes back to haunt him. They give up their supernatural powers to be normal people, normal in air quotes. And then dad's past comes back to haunt him in the form of like a criminal organization. They kill mom. And so he goes evil and starts like just taking
eviler.
On everyone. And eviler. Yes. He gets the rings back out. He puts them back on. He makes the kids start learning all of the evil stuff too. Evil in air quotes also, by the way.
Yeah.
And then
to be assassins basically.
Yeah, exactly. And then Shang decides, nope, not for me. And he leaves and goes to California where he meets Awkwafina and becomes a parking attendant and then some guys on a bus who they say are Romanian. Isn't that what they say?
Yes, they do.
They say some Romanian guys on a bus attack him and they want this pendant that his mother has given him. And that starts everything into motion where, cause Awkwafina is with him there on the bus and she's like, what the fuck just happened? You just kicked the shit out of like 47 guys. It's like 10. And the bus gets cut in half and Awkwafina does like a Sandra Bullock, but kind of more twists and turns cause they're going up and down, they're going down hills the whole time.
Yeah. They're in San Francisco. Right. So it adds an element of fun to the chase, the hills and stuff.
Great chase scene, by the way. I loved it.
Yeah. And it was also a good way that she ended up stopping the bus too. Kind of, you know, she's like, okay, I'll skim up the 45 degree angle like they do in all the action movies, but I'll sandwich myself between another truck. So that'll slow me down. And then it works. Mm-hmm. It does. And so Sean thinks he's gotten this postcard from his sister, his long lost sister, who up until, you know, I mentioned her in the summary, but she's not been mentioned at all in the story. And he says to Awkwafina, whose name is Katie, Katie, I've got to go get my sister. And she's like, whoa, your sister, the fuck? And so they're on the plane and he tells her story and they're interrupted in kind of one of the truly humorous moments when they're asked what they want to eat while he's telling this horrific story about his childhood. And she's like, would you like the beef or the vegetarian? And then they go and find the sister and they find out it was all a ruse to get them over there because dad thinks that mom's spirit is talking to them from her old home, which is, somebody help me out because I can't remember.
It's like a mystical village.
Yes.
Basically,
Talo. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that. It's a mystical village, but it's got some evil trapped in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And the evil is signaling to Sean's father, or Shang, as he, it's a big joke that he, you know, disguised himself by only changing one letter of his name. the evil is signaling to their father, hey, I'm your mom. Come let me out. They've trapped dead me in this cave. Come get me. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of gone cuckoo because he believes this. I mean, but why wouldn't you believe it if you were that in love?
Yeah, but I was going to say, she comes from a mystical village and he's lived over 1,000 years. So I don't actually think it is that wild or stretch.
That's true.
No.
You both have a good point. And so, but then it becomes just like the last hour of the movie is like, let's fight. And so that's what happens.
Yeah, well, we need to, you know, stop him from opening the gate in the mountain and freeing the soul-sucking demon. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally soul-sucking. Yes. Like his minions go and just grab people's souls and then bring them back and feed it the souls. Mm-hmm.
And then, oops, right. They do get out and it gets out.
Yeah. But then Shang also, he wakes up the dragon that's below the sea, or it wakes up or whatever. And he's like, I will ride the dragon, which he does. And then his sister does too. And Awkwafina learns how to be a really fucking solid archer. And she's actually the one who's responsible for putting the whole death of the mythological soul-sucking creature into motion, because she shoots it through the throat with an arrow. So well done, Katie. And then everybody sort of lives happily ever after until Benedict Wong comes in during the post... Actually, is it post-credits or does it happen?
It's not post-credits. It's technically mid-credits, but not really. Because it's like there's a few credits and then it happens.
Right. He comes and gets them and he's like, let's go to Doctor Strange's lab and talk about stuff. And Bruce Banner and Captain Marvel are there via, hologram. I don't know what you would call it.
Yes.
And they're like, these rings, where did they come from? And then Captain Marvel's like, I don't know, gotta go. And then the Hulk is like, he's not the Hulk, he's Bruce Banner. He's like, yeah, she does that. And I'm going to do that too. Peace out. Your lives will never be the same.
Oh, but no. Before that, he says these are, because they ask how long his father has had them. And he says 1,000 years. And they're like, these are much older than that. And they're signaling a beacon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, somewhere they are in outer space. Mm-hmm. So they have some kind of like alien origin.
Phase then, 4.
Yep.
Right. We're in phase 4.
Right. That's what I mean. I mean, this is.
I was like, we're in phase 4. But wait a minute. You also skipped the part about how the father died and gives the rings to Shang-Chi.
That's true. He does.
Yeah, because I think that's a really interesting point, is that this is an origin story, sort of, but it's a different kind of origin story because the father is, well, he's not a superhero. He's a supervillain, but he's a supervillain through most of the film. And then we see the kind of emergence of the superhero. So I don't know. I found that an interesting kind of twist. Not twist, but wrinkle.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was an interesting approach to the villain. You know, normally the villains in these movies are concerned of world domination. And, you know, in this case, the villain has already control of everything that he wants, but the one thing that he can't have is his dead wife back. So that's the thing that he's obsessed with, and so that lures
him. And in a way, it's kind of sweet.
It is
like you miss your spouse so much that you're going to go break her out of this cave.
Well, I also have to say, I mean, the fact that it's played by Tony Leung, who is an amazing actor and
great actor,
wonderful. That also, you know, elevates the role
that
too.
Helps. Mm-hmm. Also helps that Michelle Yeoh shows up. I remember seeing.
Oh my god, I love Michelle Yeoh. She's the best.
I was reading the IMDb page yesterday. I'm like, Michelle Yeoh's in this? All right, cool.
I know. I didn't actually read who was in it before watching, and I was like, oh, Michelle Yeoh, yes.
Yeah.
She's their aunt. I think you hear her before you see her. Yes. I'm like, that's her voice.
I know, right? You know? It's so good. But so that's another thing too that I love about this film, in addition to some great actors. I love the fight sequences in this. They're so dynamic. There's such a fluidity to the camera movements. I love how many different martial arts are in this. I mean, it's wild how many. I mean, it's not just, this is a kung fu and wuxia film, but it's not just that. It's also Tai Chi. It's also a whole bunch of other martial arts that I was looking at the list of. It's like 10 or 12 different martial arts, which is kind of amazing. Yeah, there's an article at Screen Rant that like lists all of them, which is great. It's beautiful to watch. It's like a choreographed dance. These are the kind of fight scenes I love to watch. I love when they're well choreographed and they're beautiful and just
you can see what's happening.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very important. Yes. A lot of very wide shots where you can actually see everybody's bodies moving.
Right. But even when you're in a confined space, like when Shang-Chi's on the bus with the henchmen who are trying to steal his necklace that was given to him by his mother, even in a confined space like that, it still uses the cinematography and the fight choreography uses the space really, really well there too. So it's in both cases, when we have expansive space and when we have confined space, it's done really, really well.
Yeah.
The scaffolding scene was also really good use of the space where they're bouncing up and down between floors and the scaffolding in that building. That was just so entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I really liked this.
Yeah, I mean, I had fun with it. I mean, I think the thing that has started to bother me about this movies is like you can always kind of tell where they're going to go. And this goes where you think it's going to go. The only thing, I mean, I think, you know, what would have been really powerful is if he had actually killed his father. Yes.
Yes.
If he had actually killed his father and then he had been like, got to take your rings, you know, I would have been like, fucking A, Marvel.
I wanted that too. Yeah. And not that I want him to be like bloodthirsty, but like he said, he's like, I'm going to have to, you know, my father trained me to be a killer. I'm going to have to stop him. This is what I have to do. And so, yeah, it just kind of felt like you're just like wimping out, like to not have that happen. And I don't know. It just, it bothered me, but I think it would have been more interesting. But yes, it's still a very, very fun film.
The other thing that I liked a lot, and otherwise this is just kind of middle of the road for me, and I also thought there was some very corny special effects work. Like you can tell where they put the money, like during the fight scenes and the dragon. And then there was some other stuff, like some backgrounds. It was just like, this seriously looks like I could have made it on my laptop. I mean, this is bad.
There's some scenes in the film. This is one of my gripes. There's some scenes in the film that look really bad. Like they just look blurry and crappy. Like the opening scene where there's the armies that are battling each other, that looked terrible for some reason. Some parts of the scaffolding fight didn't look very good. It was weird because so much of the movie just looks really sharp and really well done, and like Megan said, well choreographed, well edited. Like it just looks really good. So when it's so noticeable when something looks bad because it's such an eyesore in comparison to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
I just have to ask you guys, because I didn't have that same experience. Did you guys watch it in 4K?
I did, yeah.
Yes.
That's why I did not watch it in 4K and I did not have that experience whatsoever. So completely different experience.
So downgrade one level, everybody listening at home.
Yeah, because I'm thinking and I'm like, did I just miss it? And I'm like, how could I miss all these scenes? And then I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't watch it in 4K. That must be why.
You have a pretty good eye for that stuff. So that makes sense that you didn't see it in 4K. The other thing that I liked a lot, and I actually truly really liked this point, was when Michelle Yeoh was teaching Sean how to fight in Talo, the mystical village. Basically, she has this moment where he's got his fists wrapped as tightly as possible around whatever that is. And she just looks at him kind of like, open your hands like me. And he's like, oh, you got to be open. No words, no nothing, just a couple of looks. And then boom. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was like Tai Chi, because I think you have open hands with Tai Chi and you use energy against someone else, I think, too. So anyway.
Well, you would know better than I, because I don't know at all.
So. I mean, I'm no martial arts expert by any means.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, if you're going to go to the trouble, by the way, to cast Awkwafina, who is good in this, she doesn't really have much to do for a lot of it. She's funny, which is great. And they do turn her into kind of an action hero, which is also great. But there's also a lot where she's just kind of hanging out.
Yes.
Which is a little bit of a bummer. When you have somebody with that resume and that talent. But I mean, she brings it when she needs to, so that's good.
Yeah, but I really found, I mean, and obviously in addition to Michelle Yeoh and Tony Leung, who are both so great, I found Simo Liu really fantastic. Like, I was very pleasantly surprised to see how great he was. And I didn't really know a lot about him, but I know he has a stuntman background. And I think that's very obvious watching the choreography here. And yeah, so I was okay. I mean, I like Awkwafina, but I was kind of okay with her not being front and center because she's front and center in so many things.
That's true. She is. Mm-hmm. I also was not loving Ben Kingsley popping up here.
No!
Like, I had enough of you in the other movie you're in, okay?
Yeah, so. Well, it felt clear that they needed to have some type of, like, redemption element to his pretending to be the Mandarin in Iron Man 3. So they're like, yeah, we got to come around to that and make us like that character again. Because now, in retrospect, let's feel a little less icky about having Ben Kingsley pretend to be Asian.
But you know what's... Well, I was going to say, especially specifically East Asian, because he actually is biracial South Asian.
He is, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but no, but you're right. But he is not East. He is not Chinese. And so, yes, he is portraying mm-hmm. someone who is Chinese, which is appalling. But here's the thing. I was actually initially pleasantly surprised because I was when their father talks about how, oh, someone else took my name, the Mandarin. And I was like, yes. I was like, thank you. Let's address this. Let's address this whitewashing and this creepy racist element. And then I was thought that was going to be it. But then when Ben Kingsley actually shows up, I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? Like, no, don't redeem him. That's just stupid. I was irritated.
Mm-hmm. I can tell. I mean, yeah. I just thought it was all just kind of dumb. I
didn't read too much into it either. I just was like, it's silly and it's unnecessary, but fine. I think my biggest gripe with this movie is how heavy the exposition is in the first like half hour of the movie.
I was so glad
that I got away from it because I found it oppressive. I was like, I hope the rest of the movie is going to be like this because I'm not digging this.
Yeah.
Well, and it really got away from it. Thank God.
Yeah.
Like you said though, origin story. And there's a lot of origin though to pack in. I mean, you got 1,000 years of origin, you know? So.
Yeah. But you can show instead of tell.
Like, oh, sure you can.
Know, right. That Sean and Katie have been friends for a long time without them telling us that they've been friends.
Exactly. For a long time. Do we really need her to be like, I've known you for 10 years? Like, no.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think the really funny or weird thing about that too, Evan, and you bring up a great point, is that there's so many flashbacks. It's like you could have conveyed more of the exposition and kind of woven it throughout the flashbacks. So it's mm-hmm. kind of weird that we're having so much exposition up front and then also flashbacks woven throughout. It's
right.
It's strange. Like, why have both, you know?
So. Yeah. I think at one point there's even a flash sideways. It was weird. So
I do love a flash sideways or a flash forward. Thank you, Lost.
I don't know if that actually exists, but a flash sideways, but we'll go with it.
Yeah.
Well, flash Lost forwards exist.
Yeah. No, yeah. I know that.
We have to go back, Kate. We have to go back.
We have to go back.
Ah! Anyway, sorry. I could go on a Lost tangent very easily.
So has either of you seen Eternals yet?
No.
No. No. All right. It's only in theaters. Right.
Right.
So, so that's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And then he gets the Ten Rings, as we said, and they go to Doctor Strange's library. I want to say lab because he is a doctor, but still.
And then there's the post-credit scene.
Yes.
As well.
There is. I was going to say, just sidebar about being a doctor, you could be a doctor of like academia. Like you don't have to be.
Well, that's true.
I'm just being saucy. But yes, there's the what did you guys think about the
sister being evil?
What?
The sister being evil?
Yeah. Running the crime organization.
I mean, I guess I wasn't surprised, but at the same time, I was a little bit like, really? Because they made a whole point of how much she hated their father too. But then I was like, well, she did say she started her own underground fight ring because her father wouldn't let her join mm-hmm. his organization. So now that he's gone, she could take, okay, it all kind of makes sense. So, you know, that's about mm-hmm. as much as I thought about it.
I thought it was cool.
I think it'll come up again.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun. It wasn't like a twist or anything, but it was just like, okay, cool. So she's going to continue growing whatever empire, and then she will probably be a foe in some future mm-hmm. installment of this.
And he'll have to fight his sister the same way he had to fight his father. Maybe she'll kill him, or maybe Megan will get our family death scene.
Yes!
There you go.
Yeah, but I'm not here for a sister killing. I only want to see a father killing. No, I'm kidding.
Well,
yeah, let's be clear.
Right. Only if the father is an asshole like this father was.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to go for all the bloodlines. Why not?
I mean, training your kid to be an assassin and then sending your 14-year-old son on a hit. I mean, it's pretty brutal.
I just want to add, too, that 7-year-old Sean looks like he's going to be, I don't know. He reminded me so much of Henry, my son. It was eerie. Just like his little sweet, innocent face and his sort of, I mean, Henry's not timid, but he's kind of quiet sometimes, which is funny if you were ever around him, because you'd be like, this kid's quiet. What are you talking about? But yeah, and I just like, it kind of broke my heart seeing the 7-year-old son scenes where he was just so upset. And then his dad takes him on that fucking murder run at the restaurant.
Oh my God, that scene is amazing.
That was brutal.
Yeah, I was just like, did you just take your son there and watch him witness you, make him watch you, you know what I'm trying to say, make him witness you kill like 14 dudes?
Yes.
That's fucking horrible. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So that's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Do we have anything we want to add before we wrap up on that one?
One small note. I was really excited to see, even very, very briefly, Cai Xin show up. Lucky Grandma. I loved her in that movie.
And yes. She
was Awkwafina's grandma in this, too.
She is amazing. She's always great, even for just a few moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy to see her.
That was fun to see her.
I agree.
Megan, did you have any final thoughts?
No. Well, I just think we didn't talk really about how this is a Destin Daniel Cretton film, and I think that's interesting just because...
Okay.
Well, no, I think it's more kind of a broader note. I think it's interesting, like, thinking about Eternals and this film. Like, it's interesting that Marvel's bringing in more kind of, I don't want to say auteur directors, but kind of, it's just interesting because this to me felt like as much as it feels like a Marvel film in many ways, this to me felt more like a Disney animated film. And although it was not animated, of course, it was live action. But so it was just, I think it's interesting when you bring in different directors who have different visions and you actually let them, you know, do their thing. So,
yeah,
more a general observation.
I think I've actually seen all of his other movies because I've definitely seen Short Term 12 and Just Mercy. Did he do The Glass Castle?
Yes, he did.
Then I've seen those three movies. Amazing. I've seen his entire filmography, unless he's got short films and other small films that I haven't seen.
Which he does.
Which he does. Of course he does. Of course he does. It wouldn't be an episode of Spoiler Piece if I get something completely wrong. So, all righty. Well, I think that just about wraps it up for this week. Real quick recap, everyone. It sounds like we're all on board to see Julia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
That is in select theaters and also on demand. The Feast. Everyone. I mean, I'd say see it. Sure.
I would say see it.
If you're into body horror, Evan, I think you're going to be. Are you a no?
I'm a no on this.
The Feast is in theaters today, and it will also be available anywhere on demand, pretty much. And then finally, as I got wrong about Shang-Chi being the most recent Marvel film, it is not, but it is on Disney Plus, and it's probably still in a few theaters out there, right? So there
but
you
it
go.
Is the most recent Marvel film we've seen, so there you are.
That's true. Yes. I was correct about one thing. Yes. There you have it.
And it's the most recent film we've covered from Marvel. Oh, wait, I just want to say, I would also recommend Shang-Chi and the Feast.
I beg your pardon, I forgot to ask. Yeah, you two say yes, I say, yeah, all right, sure. I mean, kind of not. If you have Disney Plus, go ahead.
For the Feast, too?
Oh, the Feast, for sure.
Oh, okay.
No. I mean, I'm all in on the Feast. Like, I mean, like you, I don't really think I need to see it again, but one time
was good.
Yeah. So now you know the movies, now you know where they are, so yay. Otto, thanks so much for editing the show each week and, you know, making us sound good and taking it out of our hands. It is a big, big, big deal. Thank you.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. You can find us on our website, spoilerpiece.com. You can find us on social media. We're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you wanted to get in touch with us, please send us an email, spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you could give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
you could leave us a voicemail and you could say, I cannot believe that Evan didn't like the feast. That's crazy. Yeah. And if you really, really like the show, please rate and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. And if you really, 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 that's three reallys, like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, this week we talk about the 2002 home invasion thriller Panic Room, starring Jodie Foster. We have a first timer on that one, so that was a big, fun conversation. Mm-hmm. And that is it. My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies. I can be found on all the social medias as Dave Sees Movies. That's Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld and on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.